I'm going to call the City of Lapine Planning Commission to order for Wednesday, September 21st, 2016 at 6 o'clock. We'll establish a quorum.
Norman Klein.
Don Greiner.
Russ Smith.
And Doug Ward is not here by prior approval. He's on a cruise. I'm sure he's thinking about us.
Sure.
Russ, because you're new, you want to lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, we have any added agenda items?
We do not.
But anybody here?
I don't.
Okay, moving right along. Public comments. Seeing none. Has everybody had a chance to read the agenda or the minutes from the July 21st meeting?
Yes.
Is there any corrections or changes?
I have none.
No.
Okay, so can I have a motion to approve?
I move that we approve the minutes.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, approved as written. Moving to city manager, an update on the planning applications. Number seven
is the building permit report that's now being generated by Deschutes County, being sent to the city. It's being sent to myself in particular weekly and at the end of each month, just giving an update on what permits were issued within the city of Lapine. So a little bit of background information for Russ and for anyone else in the audience that might not know is, you know, we have control over land use. We have our zoning ordinance that says where people can do what they can do. Commercial zone, residential zone, industrial zone, etc. So we have a land use process. Tammy's an accredited planner. She reviews the applications for the criteria in our comprehensive plan zoning ordinance, and she'll write a decision. After the applicant has secured a decision, they still cannot build. They need to get their building permits, whether it's structural, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, from the county, who has the building official, Randy Scheid, and his team, who review and administer those building permits. So one of the pieces of the building permit fee that someone pays is for what's called advanced planning. And if you're outside of the city limits and you get a Deschutes County permit, that advanced planning fee helps to go to the Deschutes County Community Development Department that did planning for that project. Well, inside the city limits, Deschutes County didn't do any planning for that project. We did. So we put an IGA in place with Deschutes County effective July 1 that says any of that percentage of that particular fee that's collected by the county will now be remitted, transferred back to the city to help us support our community development department and our planning services. So part of tracking how much that amount is having an accurate understanding of what permits are issued within the city. And it's just good to know, you know, sometimes I've gotten questions from various planning commissioners or counselors or other people associated with the city that were wondering, you know, what's going on in town. So I had forwarded this out to the Planning Commission, I think, you know, a month ago or a few weeks ago, just giving you an update that we're now receiving this, and I'm happy to include it in Planning Commission packets moving forward, or forward it via email, or both. So I just wanted to make sure everyone was aware of that and see if you had any questions.
I have a question. If you take it and go down to the fourth one, residential new only one and two family dwelling, and the price of that is $198,500. You charged them almost $800, $779.99, and the three above it about two above it or more, and one is a little less, and they were all $89. What's the difference?
Yeah, that's a good question. These are all the fees in that column are the fees that were collected by Deschutes County. And if you look over, I was wondering if maybe it said it on one of the other columns, but it doesn't look like it does. My assumption is that so none of those have been built. I know that for sure, because if you look at the addresses, those are in Huntington Meadows. But they must have started to pull some of the permits. So long story short, Don, I don't know exactly, but the numbers that you see in that column under fees is what Deschutes County collected, and then they just give us a very small percentage of that. So we get, I think it's 0.1% of the job value. And you see the job value in that column. So when you start getting a job value that's up near $1 million or $2 million for a bigger project, 0.1% can really add up. Or maybe it's 0.23%. I don't know the exact number, but we got about $750 from the county in July. I know that for sure.
Then one other question I have. Take the new store that's being built over here. Can we have an idea of how much the total they had to pay for SDCs?
Yeah, to the city for SDCs? I can get you that number.
I can.
Do you remember the EDUs that we assessed?
I can tell you that number. If you give me 3 minutes.
Three minutes?
I was just wondering it's how much it cost them just to build here, that's all.
Well, yeah, so per EDU, which is an equivalent dwelling unit, it's about $5,700 for sewer and about $1,700 for water. So if you're building a single family home, that's one equivalent dwelling unit. You pay one SDC for water, one for sewer. It gets a little trickier when you get into these commercial properties because, you know, you've got bathrooms and faucets and you don't know exactly how much it's being used. So we can give you an exact number. I think it was two SDCs, I believe.
For both sides of the building, it was $28,000. For water and sewer SDCs. I don't know what they paid for building permit fees.
Just water and sewer.
Well, yes. You can see how much they paid for other permits when you go down there and see the cost of the buildings and the cost of the mechanical and electrical and all of that stuff that's added in down there. And really, when you get right down to it, it cost them a bundle of money to build that building here.
Yeah, absolutely. Most other cities have, probably most prominently that we don't, is a transportation SDC, transportation system development charge. We don't have that at this time. That's something that we probably will look into in the future. And just as an aside, we're going through a process of changing our SDC methodology, which it's all controlled by the state. I mean, you have to say that we need these projects over the next 20 years in our master plans, water and sewer, and therefore to pay for that, we need to assess these fees to help that system. So,
does that ever change? Does that go up and down? I mean, once things are built, do SDCs go down?
That's a good question. I don't know if you have any background on that. My assumption is that generally, if they go any direction, they go up. By that, it's you're growing. Your
right.
System is constantly growing, and therefore, you know, the improvements you need to make are larger and larger investments to provide the services to residences and commercial properties. That's
well,
my hunch.
Seems to me that with all of these permits and everything that they have to purchase, that it discourages investment in the community in large buildings. That's my opinion.
These are, if you went anywhere in Deschutes County, whether it was unincorporated or incorporated, you would have to pay these. If you're inside a city, you have another layer of fees that are associated with that. You know, whether you're in Van Redmond or Sisters or Lapine, you'll pay associated fees. And we have the lowest SDCs, system development charges, and likely the lowest land cost as well in Deschutes County. So there's different approaches to it. You know, I'd say we're probably not at the cumbersome end of things at this time.
How about you, Russ? Do you have any questions?
No,
No, on this, just a comment that I can remember. We saw some of the, when we were going through the water bill and started comparing to other cities, we are way low.
Yeah.
And very moderate in comparison with, as a matter of fact, I think we're about the lowest one anybody in all of Oregon. So SDCs, yes, it sounds bad, but in comparison, when you're building $1 million, $28,000 is nothing. You know, that's a new bathroom. So.
How about you? You have any questions?
Well, just what Don said, Don, Lapine has a very low overall package nowadays, and it should be very attractive to people. From what I've read and paid attention to, that we're in pretty good shape now, and that's why you're seeing more of this stuff coming about in the whole area. We're going the right direction.
I had a couple questions. In the first few, it says 1 and 2 family dwelling. New only. Is that duplexes or is it either or?
I will ask the county for their call it kind of key to say what that designation officially stands for. I know that those are single family homes. Okay. Because I've been talking to this developer about building. So the other thing we did, just real quick aside, is we created a building permit release form. So for commercial developments, the developer has to come into the city and submit a site plan. They have to pay a fee for staff time to review and process and issue a decision. Okay. With residential homes, there's no site plan application. So what was happening is that the county would get these applications for permits, and then they would contact the city and say, hey, can we issue these permits for such and such property, you know, and we would go, well, I've never heard of that development happening on this property for a residential home. And so then we would have to go and pull the property and look at setbacks, and there's just a few things to consider on residential. So what we did is we created this building permit release form. It's just one page, doesn't cost the applicant anything. It's very, very simple to fill out for the most part. And if someone goes to the county and wants a permit for inside the city limits, they'll say, do you have your building permit release form? And if they don't, they're going to say, you need to go talk to the city of Lapine. So that means they'll come talk to us first, and we'll get the opportunity to review it based on our criteria, sign off on that, stamp it, paid stamp it, those, that and the plans, so that then when they go back to the county knows they're reviewing the same thing that we've looked at.
Okay. The other, what is the definition of the mechanical permit? I didn't really understand what that was.
That's a good. Do you know what that
eating in there? Also?
Actually, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Since I have one on there.
Oh.
There you go.
We just put in a ductless heating cooling unit.
That makes sense.
And you need one for that in order to. It's a heat pump and ductless air filtration system.
Is it specific to that, or would it be other things?
It would be anything else that would be above a certain amount, I think you have to get a permit for. Fortunately, the contractor takes care of them, but...
Yeah, something doesn't fall under the electrical, the structural, it's right. Usually the mechanical.
I know I've had electrical before, I've never had the mechanical.
But. I've never seen that before. And I also noticed that this is since July. Now, in the future, are we going to be getting them every month, or are they going to do it every couple months, or?
I'm pretty sure that I've been getting it weekly.
Oh,
which,
really?
And one of the reports is a weekly report that says this has occurred in the past week, and then the other report, which I don't recall if it was weekly or monthly, is what's similar to this, where this will just keep growing, which will say all permits issued this fiscal year, going back to July 1. And so that's, you know, and we're not getting any of this advanced planning fee from the county prior to July 1. We're not going retroactive. So it's essentially any of these moving forward that has that advanced planning fee as a component of it that we'll get a piece of. So.
This is the second one you've set up.
Is it?
I got it.
Okay.
Well, these are, did you get this one?
I got the first one and that one too.
Oh, okay.
So there's two out.
Yeah, the one that I had emailed, this might be a more current version,
yeah.
Okay. Which wouldn't surprise. Yeah, so I'm happy to continue forwarding those and answering questions. I think it's the one tricky thing though is that a lot of times people will pull permits and not do anything. And that's why, I mean, even when you look at these permits for even the first five, where it says, you know, the submit date, they were back in early July. Well, you go drive by 16457 Betty Drive and you won't see anything.
Nothing.
It hasn't happened yet. So that's one tricky thing with permits. Keep in mind.
Well, I'd be interested to know, you know, the question that Don asked about what the difference is, why there was, maybe they got a whole bunch of different permits at one time or something. But I'd be interested to know that too.
Yeah, I'll ask Tracy Griffin, who's she's been really helpful. She's a Deschutes County permit technician. She's here at City Hall on Tuesdays from 9 to 4, and City Hall's quite a bit busier on those days when folks are coming in to get permits. So I'll ask her next Tuesday.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anything else?
No.
Okay. Moving on. Discussion on the draft recreational marijuana time, place, and manner and TPM regulations. Do you want to update us on that?
Yeah. So we... I'll give a little bit of background for everyone and make sure I have it organized in my mind correctly as well. So the City Council chose to put recreational marijuana retail sales on the ballot in November. That means that the voters in the City of LaPlante will decide up or down, do we want to allow recreational dispensaries? We currently have two medical dispensaries inside the city limits. And ordinance 2015-02 is the equivalent of what is the draft in front of you, but this from 2015 is for medical marijuana. And so these are the restrictions or the regulations that are put on where can this business be located, how can it operate, what is it required to do with the city? So in terms of an application or getting some kind of a license for a review of their business, and what other restrictions, whether it's state or otherwise, must they follow? So this is a draft for in anticipation of if that passes in November, we want to be prepared. And so I wanted to share this with you. I got it just a few days ago. And I want to point out a couple changes that when I reviewed it and went over it with the legal team and with Tammy, that were made subsequent to the draft you have in your hands. So I will not go through everything. I'm going to touch on a couple points, and then I would love to answer questions or clarify on anything. So a lot of what you'll see in here is it refers back to this ORS, Oregon Revised Statutes, 475B, or some other state regulation. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission is regulating the recreational marijuana industry in Oregon, and they're setting various restrictions, various levels of competency that people getting a license must have, things like that, hoops to jump through to an extent, but good and important regulations. So you'll see that in various places in here. The first thing I want to point out is on page 5, it's section 6.9. It says business location. And in this section, essentially what it's doing is it's saying a retailer, I'm paraphrasing, must not be located within 1,000 feet of a public or private elementary, secondary, or career school attended primarily by minors. And then it defines what 1,000 feet means. In the ordinance we have currently for medical marijuana dispensaries, okay, it currently states that dispensaries, that same language is in the version we have enacted currently, but it also adds 750 feet within a library, 500 feet within a childcare facility, and then finally within 1,000 feet of another dispensary. So those are the rules we have in place for medical, and when talking with it with legal, you know, I thought that it would be in the best interest of the city to mirror the language that we have in the medical ordinance.
You said 750 feet for a library and 500 feet for what?
Child care facility.
Child care?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm a little faster. And then 1,000 feet within another dispensary.
So this absolutely rules out medical and recreational being sold in out of the same facility.
Yes, I think. The tricky thing with this industry and this analogy I've heard is that it's like building an airplane in flight. So we're moving forward. Time is passing, whether we like it or not. And we must try to, and even the lawyers will say this, they don't have a good answer. The state might combine medical and recreational marijuana in 6 months when they're in session. So it's hard to know for sure. Right now, the advice, legal advice we're getting is we have these medical restrictions in place. We need to put recreational restrictions in place. And if it changes down the road, we can adapt at that time. Ultimately, and this is no secret, the gentleman who I've talked with at the medical dispensaries here will tell you that they want to be in the recreational marijuana business, not the medical marijuana business, because that's where the money is. And so it would not surprise me if the vote passes in November that both of those locations, same product, to a degree, different name, are selling recreational marijuana instead of medical marijuana. If they are doing that, we need to make sure that the time, place, manner restrictions are in place, so because they wouldn't move, their product wouldn't change, but the rules that apply to them might change if we don't get these new regulations in place.
Would that mean if they changed from medical to recreational, that if I had a license to buy recreational marijuana, that I can't go in there and buy it as recreational marijuana?
If they are a recreational marijuana retailer, anyone over the age of 21 can go in there and buy marijuana.
That would be my interpretation, yes.
Correct.
So if I required by my prescription to get so-and-so, I could go in and they could probably give me the same, but I would pay retail recreational price instead of medical price.
They would sell it to you, essentially. I don't know if they would look at your prescription if they were a recreational dispensary. I don't know to be 100% sure. You don't have to have a prescription to get your
prescription. Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's what I meant.
Okay, correct.
So in order, by the state of Oregon, in order for them to get the recreational, are there other rules in addition to the medical?
As far as being a processor for retailer,
in order to be authorized to do that?
Yeah, there are. I don't know the extent of what that application process entails, but there are steps that they must take. And one of the steps that ultimately they're going to have to do is they'll have to get, I'm certain, the land use compatibility statement, which is a form that lets a local jurisdiction like city or county talk to the state and say, they want to put a dispensary in this location. City, are you okay with that? Does it follow your regulations? Does it follow your zoning ordinance? And if it does, if the vote passes in November, we would sign that, and then they would move on with the application process through the state.
I noticed in here too that it also refers to the processing and different things. Now, there's been talk about the growing of marijuana out mm-hmm. there in the industrial park. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, are they now bound by these same rules?
That's a great question and a good observation. This does touch section 6.4, page 4, on production and processing restrictions. So production, think of growing the plant, and processing is turning it into something else. You know, it could be an oil or other things that they do. And so most of you will remember back, and 6 months ago at this point-ish, spring, we amended, all of you recommended to council, and council amended the the zoning ordinance to say that, you know, indoor agriculture is allowed in the industrial park with a conditional use. It must be a solid structure, which would require building permits. It cannot be a hoop house. It has to meet snow and wind load, et cetera, et cetera. So through the land use process that we enforce through the site plan decision, can legally enforce, there are certain restrictions on production and processing. This adds a couple things, but if you'll read, you know, most of these say what is allowed under Oregon law, or, you know, must obtain the applicable endorsement under OAR 845. The only one that probably would add an extra sliver of a layer on what we've already done, which I think what we already did was a good move to protect the city, is C, that says no production, processing, and or wholesaling may occur in any outdoor area, which our zoning would already not have allowed that, because it's about indoor agriculture. The industrial park is an industrial park, not an agricultural park,
right,
to a degree. And then it says, and or in any structure where the production, processing, and or wholesaling is visible from outside of the structure. So it must be screened or something like that to offset that. But the majority of these new regulations are just for, mostly for, the retail sales. Because no one has built a new building to grow marijuana out there, but we have received applications and a variety of interest, which most has faded away for whatever reason, I'm not gonna speculate. We haven't got a new building out there for someone growing marijuana.
One of the questions I have, the old rules for medical marijuana said no two shall be inside of 1,000 foot.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay for retail sales, but if you're combining testing, if you're combining growing, if you're combining all the rest of these phases, are we saying 1,000 foot between everything, or are we going to allow them to, okay, I am testing and I am selling, or something like that?
It would be,
because as soon as we put that 1,000 foot in there, it may have been great for medical, but now you've got all sorts of different things coming in here for recreation, and that 1,000 foot may come back and bite us. We can't put recreation next to medical 1,000 foot. We only have so many 1,000 feet around here to play with.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. The 1,000 feet is, the way I read this, is specifically just for the retail sales. And I wasn't here when this was passed in 2015, but my understanding is that, you know, to a degree, there's certain ways you can limit the number of these establishments in your city. And one of which is to do that. I mean, obviously,
I know, but the way this thing is written is not the way it's coming across. I mean, with a 1,000 foot barrier.
Yeah. So essentially, the one, if, like, hypothetically, and I don't know the exact distances, but hypothetically, if these two medical dispensaries were recreational dispensaries, probably this south of First Street downtown area, there wouldn't be another dispensary located, because on the west side of the highway in Huntington, you've got all the schools, so you wouldn't be able to go near that. You could probably locate one up at the Wikiup area, but you probably could only locate one unless you, I don't know if that's about how many 1,000 feet that is up there, but it's essentially, it's
could
to
be
say,
Gordy's.
There you go.
One on Gordy's.
Who knows? So it's basically to say that, you know, and I don't think that the market to an extent will dictate that. I don't think if you got rid of that Lapine would all of a sudden have 20 of them.
I think what the original thought was behind that was, we do not want a marijuana street going on.
There you go.
Yeah. Which is fine, but, you know, I think that 1,000 foot is a quite a big expansion. We've got to, you know, be able to think, you know, we have numerous things going on here, not just retail sales.
Yeah, and I will say that the way this is written right now, only it only applies to retailers, so anyone who wants to do production or processing in the industrial park, as it stands now, if these were adopted, would not, you they could be within 1,000 feet of each other.
Okay.
So, because that...
Otherwise, yeah. We just wiped out our industrial park with the first one we got there.
Exactly. And so we have not, at some point, when some of these businesses start to actually build a building and get going, we will want to revisit that question of how many is the right amount in our industrial park. Yeah. But until I see some of those starting to happen, we're not going to say hold the horses before something's even happened. So this is just for retail in anticipation of that November 8th vote. And that's a great point. At some time on the road, we'll want to revisit that question of how much in our industrial park. So
I also had some other questions here. On number 4, the annual permit requirement, it carefully says federal, state, and local laws. Federal laws, it's illegal. Mm-hmm. I think the term federal law should be taken out. It's already illegal. It's a class 1.
Yeah, it's a schedule. Yeah, it's
schedule. That's in all of their regulations. I noticed that too.
They also have it on 6 and 6-1. And I think it would just be advisable to drop the federal out of that, because as soon as we mention federal and complying with federal law, I know what the thought was behind it, but what they aren't recognizing is the fact that this is already illegal at a federal level. So, you know, we're writing a law to make it illegal.
That's true. I noticed that, and I outlined every one in my copy, too. And I feel that if they agree to that, they automatically screw themselves, because they're already violating federal law.
I mean, we're on the cutting edge here. You know, when the states wants to do this, but until the feds get their act together, we're going to be illegal.
Yeah, I will. That's perfect. That this is the kind of those are the kind of things that I want to. I'm going to take back to our legal team, who I do not have a JD. I'm not a practicing attorney, but I will find out if there's a reason they put that in there, or if it was an oversight, or if it conflicts, or
they put it in there.
It could, yeah.
Because everybody always says that, you know, federal, state, and local.
Yeah, they probably copied and pasted that. Who knows? Yes. I'll check with them on that.
The next one is on 613, criminal convictions. I found that rather strange that we allow felons to open shop.
It's saying anyone who meets those categories may not be a company principal, employee, and or volunteer of the business, or have a financial interest in the business operated in city's incorporated limits. So it's saying they cannot be.
So they can be a one-time felon. That's the way I read that.
Okay. A person who has been convicted in any state for any felony, including for the manufacture or delivery of a controlled substance in Schedule 1 or Schedule 2, once or more in the 5 years immediately preceding the date of application or renewal, or twice or more in the person's lifetime, may not be a company principal, employee, and or volunteer of the business, or have a financial interest in this business operated in the city's incorporated limits.
So a felon that goes away after 5 years in prison?
It sounds that way, yeah.
Just saying.
Okay. No, I'm just...
Coming out of prison, I can start my marijuana farm.
I'm just... I don't know if that means... Yeah, it says convicted.
The other thing is that I wanted to bring up on that should be written in there is, if I have a permit to be a marijuana salesman, whatever, if I commit a felony, do Do I get my license pulled or do I keep on going?
My assumption from the state would be they would pull it. One thing I have not done is spend a significant portion of my day becoming an expert on the OLCC regulations. I've tidied up my game a little bit. I'm sorry. I'll go home after this and do some work. So I'm vaguely familiar. We've spent some time digging when we were passing the zoning ordinance.
Sure.
We dug into it. But that's a great point. It is. And I'll try to downplay the point.
A lot of the things I've seen written in other places that if you are a felon, I mean, you commit a felony, they go to Colorado and commit them. Up there, they have to report it back here inside 10 days, or they are in violation. They can go to jail for that one, too. Put in something like the same thing as a carry permit. You know, if you violate that law, we're going to nail you for it.
That was my question on this. I don't see anything about enforcement, really. I do see where they have to open their books up to the city manager to be able to check them, but I didn't see anything about enforcement anywhere, if they are in violation.
Yeah, it's I believe it's Section 9. It says permit denial, suspension, and revocation. Semicolon penalties, semicolon appeals. So there it lays out, you know, what are the grounds for denial, suspension, or revocation of the license, and then it moves down into violations and infractions that the city can levy, not to exceed $500, but that's each day is a separate violation.
So this would be up to the city manager basically to enforce this, is that?
Yeah, just like essentially any other ordinance, it's up to the city manager and staff to enforce and to a degree interpret when to appropriately enforce. It's spelled out some of the processes, you know, it says that an appeal must be hand delivered, and it talks about some of those subtleties of the process, but yeah, ultimately it would be up to the city manager to enforce. One of the other sections, real quick, I would like to draw your attention to. It was, let me see here. Actually, 6.6, bottom of page 4, it says operating hours. It says daily operating hours for retailers and wholesalers must be no earlier than 7 a.m. or later than 10 p.m. Monday through Sunday. The existing medical retailer restrictions are that it must not open earlier than 9 a.m. and stay open later than 7 p.m. Monday through Sunday. So one of the recommendations I made to legal to change the draft was to mirror what we already have in place for medical with retail. And these are, you know, this is a draft set of some of these restrictions. So to a degree, you know, we have flexibility to say it should be more restrictive or less restrictive.
I think it should be less restrictive than medical, that's for sure.
That was my thought, and you know, the existing owners of the medical facilities in town, you know, if they convert, they're aware of the medical restrictions. So, you know, I think to a degree it makes sense for them to mirror each other.
Well, let's take one thing that's for sure. There's only 24 hours in a day. We've already got the city manager on so much stuff that he'd be working 20 to 22 of those 24 hours.
He's
got everything done. And I think that we're piling too much on him to enforce, because I don't think we hired him to enforce things. One of the things that I wanted to talk about too was business records and keeping business records. And it says there that it has to be, it should be as required by the manager. In my opinion, we may not have a manager all the time that's an accountant. I would suggest that we have in there that there should be someone available, like an accountant, that can find the leaks that I know people can build into their bookkeeping system that sometimes you just overlook. And I know that from experience and watching how people try to do things when I'm auditing.
Could it be designee, just or designee or something?
Yeah, if you look in section 11, page 8, 11.1, about halfway through that paragraph, it reads, the manager may examine or cause to be examined by an agent or representative designated by the manager at any reasonable time, the premises of the business, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, it would be a combination of the city manager and or whichever expert would be required to make that call. I mean, this includes, you know, wastewater coming from the business. Well, you know, Jake, the public works manager, would probably go with me to look at that, or the engineer, or the city planner, or the city financial, so, or the city attorney. So, yeah, the appropriate expert in whichever field would be involved.
What would be wrong with requiring an audit of their financial records every set period of time, just to make sure there are no leaks? I mean, this is a cash business right now. And I'll tell you, it's awful easy to slip a $5 bill in your pocket or a $100 bill in your pocket. Very easy. And you've got to be able to figure out whether that $100 bill went in somebody's pocket or whether it didn't.
Yeah, I think that section 6.14, bottom of page 5 and the top of page 6.15, where it says accounting system and records and also record keeping, is essentially trying to accomplish that end. You know, I know that the state is putting in place what's called a seed to sale system. So you've got a plant or a seed that becomes a plant and it produces marijuana, and then that marijuana is sold to a customer, and that product must be tracked from seed to sale. And so they've got barcoding software and all kinds of things that, it's incredible the amount of time and energy that OLCs, they must put into it as a regulatory authority. So I'm pretty confident that that's covered. I mean, I remember I've been to one of the medical dispensaries, actually I've been inside both, and seen the security systems that they have in place, the safes they have in place. With medical, you have to enter a little room, and then they check your medical card, and then they enter you into the dispensary. And so all of those are requirements that the state requires. Oregon Health Authority, which regulates medical, opposed to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission that regulates recreational, require. And so I've been on premise for those. So I envision making site visits and, you know, but again, to a degree, it'll be more annually and as needed. And if we envision there being two, maybe three, it's not a daily type of thing. It should be kind of an annual, or if there's an issue, investigating that issue. That's what I envision. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. No, that's a great point. And actually, Tammy just pointed out an excellent. In the definitions section, you know, where it says manager, quote manager, it reads city manager, parentheses, or his or her designee, and or any other city officer, employee, or agent appointed by the council from time to time. So that's a good observation.
Another thing is, as we start getting the revenue back in, if we go through with this, we're going to have more money to be able to subcontract an accountant out there to actually keep track of all this. I mean, we don't know how much money is coming in, but if we start coming in, as I've read the projections out of Colorado and the rest of them, we're talking some pretty hairy money. And if that's true and we get 3% of it, we can well afford to have some accountants out there. You know, okay, every 3 months or surprise audits or whatever else.
That's a good point.
You know, right now there's no way on earth we could afford to do it.
We will, yeah, we'll receive a small piece from the state if these dispensaries are allowed. And then the tricky part, so read and or fill out your ballot carefully in November, there's two questions. There's one whether to allow the sales of recreational marijuana, and there's another whether to impose a 3% tax on marijuana. So theoretically, the marijuana sales could be allowed and the tax could not be imposed. Mm-hmm. Marijuana sales aren't allowed, then the tax question is null. So, yeah, that's an interesting question. I'm actually going to ask Ashley real quick. Back when the city had a tax on the medical marijuana, which is no longer, they were submitting financials to us to show that percentage of their revenue that they were sending to the city, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So I would expect to get something similar if it's allowed.
We have a reporting form for taxes.
Yeah.
It's very similar to what a motel would fill out for transient room tax.
That's a good example. Thanks.
One other question. If I buy a package of cigarettes in a store, or I come into a public building and I have cigarettes and I want to smoke, I have to be 10 feet away from the door before I can smoke. Are we going to put a regulation how close to a sales place or a building can you consume the marijuana? I would think more. It would be hard to do it on a public building because of the medical situation, but on a point of sale, it would seem to me like we could put a restriction on how close to that point of sale it could be used.
I believe there are state regulations on that that would trump anything that the city would put on it. And again, I don't know those rules, but I think they are pretty strict as far as where you can use it.
It can't be in public, I know that.
That's right.
Yeah,
so
correct.
As long as your building's in public, you aren't supposed to be smoking there.
No, so yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
No, that's good. That's exactly what I was hoping for. So I appreciate that. Yeah, I will get some clarification from the city's legal staff, and we'll be having one of the lawyers call in to the council work session next Tuesday to answer some of these more legal questions as well.
One more thing on this security system. One place it says that the if they're investigating a thing, they can use the surveillance camera, but we don't have in here that they're required to have a surveillance system.
That's one of the state regulations, I know for sure.
That's going in?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the requirements. Again, when I visited the medical ones, I observed they had, you know, working security systems on both entrances, and I think they had, you know, five different monitors. Anyways, I know that will be a requirement.
It doesn't specify camera, that's why I said that.
No, it's a good
question. Well, we don't need to do anything on this. This is just discussion, and
absolutely,
there will be further discussion at the city council, is what you're saying.
At the council work session next week, correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll take some of these questions, talk with legal staff, get refined, and then bring that draft to council next week to talk to you guys.
All right, update on planning applications and projects.
Well,
you sent us a couple of applications, I know.
Is that what you're going to be talking about? Well, I can do it two ways. I can kind of open it up if any of you have questions, or there are a couple things in particular in terms of city projects that I'd like to give a little bit of an update on, and then Tammy can give an update on some of the actual planning applications that we have in motion. So I don't know, if any of you have specific questions, feel free to go ahead.
I'd just like to mention, I did check on these two that came up that are actually dividing areas. I wonder if we could include the sketch that shows how they're divided. with this package when it's signed. Because I know how they are now because I looked it up.
Mm-hmm. Which is great, and I hope that more folks will. The notices that we send out are very strictly prescribed by state law.
Yeah,
so what they have in them is all they should probably have in them. But that's why we do know that if you want more information, that information is available here. So people do need to come down and ask for it in the city.
So it's very easy to find the information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good recommendation that Tammy put in place, actually, is to, you've got all these public noticing requirements, some from the state and then some from city requirements that we put in place as well. And so to kind of get ahead of some of that, we've been doing public notices, public mailings to its property owners within.
It depends on the application, but for something like this, it would be a 100-foot radius. If it's a comp plan change or a zone change, we go 500 feet. But yeah, with every application that comes in, we're sending out notices, and Ashley is working on those pretty furiously when they come in. I think right now we've got everything out at this point. But you all will be getting a lot more mail because it's gotten pretty busy.
Well, on these particular ones, I did have this one, an application to partition an existing 2.2 acre into three parcels of 0.04 acres each. What is the going? I mean, is this a brand new thing, or are a lot of the other parcels that size?
Which one are you looking at? Is that the Midsway?
The first cabin.
That would be Midsway.
Investments on there.
Yeah, that's Midsway.
There.
Well, it depends on the application. That specific one, and we can get into whatever detail you want to, either online or offline. But on that specific one, no, there are not a lot of lots immediately adjacent to it. Just north of it, there are much smaller lots than that. And I don't remember the name of the cul-de-sac that it's off of, but just a few lots north, those were subdivided into fairly small lots. But that one there is adjacent to some industrial property on the south. That's probably going to be remain large lot.
Yeah, that's just south of Chopin Court and basically across the street and down south from Midstate Electric, out on Midsway.
As a planning commission, I'm concerned when we start changing the whole look of the neighborhood by subdividing. I mean, once it starts, it's not going to stop. And especially if it's a new one that has never been, that's not the norm in that area, I think that's, something that really we need to be aware of.
Absolutely, and and it's a bigger planning question just in general, I think, citywide. When we get an application in like that, we have to review it very specifically against the criteria that's laid out for, say, a partition, and those relate to water and sewer capacity, how they're going to be served, driveway access is important, is the correct amount of right-of-way being dedicated for sidewalks and streetscape that's required for the TSP. But one thing that the zoning code largely does not have are minimum lot sizes for a lot such as this. We have some minimum lot sizing in there for multifamily dwelling of 3,000 square feet, which is very small, for the first unit, and 1,000 square feet in addition to that. But for a single family lot, we don't have in the code right now a minimum lot sizing. So we don't have a criteria to gauge that lot sizing on. What we have to look at is the use of that lot be accommodated with the resulting lot that they have, and can they be serviced with utilities? So it's a very big planning commission, or just in general planning question, for the way the codes are written and how much you want to influence the lot sizing in the city.
One thing too, if a parcel is split into more than three resulting lots, it's a subdivision, correct?
Three or more is considered.
Three or more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so that's a whole different process they would have to go through.
It can be.
To a degree.
Yeah, it can be. But not necessarily. In this case, it's not going to trigger more than a...
Because they're going from one to three lots. Gotcha. Okay, that's good to know. And then, you know, if someone came in from the Cagle neighborhood and said, I have a 1-acre lot and would like to split it in half, obviously we would look at utilities and road condition and all that stuff and say, no, because that's not allowed. So one thing we can do is we can clarify the code, as Tammy's alluding to, in terms of lot size, or you can just put an overlay zone, right, in terms on certain areas of the city, and this has been talked about to a degree, although we're not at the stage of actually needing to do it yet, but saying, in laying over all of Cagle, that you cannot, say, have a lot smaller than 1 acre. So if you had a 2-acre lot, you could split it into 2 acres, but if you have a 1.15 acre lot, you're done. You can't split it anymore. So there is discretion, there's room for the city to make some of these decisions. And our zoning ordinance, which Tammy's done a wonderful job of A, dealing with the flood of applications we've gotten in the last 9 months, which has been a blessing. That's all, I would say, good development for the most part. But at the same time, catching things that need to be fixed here, or there's a question mark over there, or, you know, in the next 6 months we should really look at this. And so it's a balance between all of that. And I think with winter coming over here, it's getting cold, things will slow down, development will slow down a little bit, and I think we can do a little more of this house cleaning stuff in the next 6 months-ish.
So. And when you talk about utilities and that sort of thing, that's another thing. We ran into a problem because some of the houses were so close together for snow removal. So that's a unique situation that we have here in La Pine that has to be looked at. They have to make sure there's some way to get, you know, snow removal done.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And even particularly after last winter, that became very evident, and it was something we started looking at with all of our site plan reviews of where are you going to put the snow. And so a lot of the larger lot developments have been looking at designing some of their retention ponds for, can it fit the snow in the winter and the water, say, in the spring. So that is a very important issue. Even though the code might not say snow removal, we still keep that in mind when we review things. And it's a good reminder to bring that up. I appreciate that.
And one thing that's always tricky as a reminder as well is that when we make changes to the code, none of it's retroactive.
That's right.
Right. So it's just for future applications, future development. So that only goes so far. And I know that certain, you know, folks around town, I hear it at times, are saying, you know, well, this rule applies to here but not there. And well, it's to a degree, yes, but we just can't go retroactive. We can't go back in time and apply it to someone who's been there for 5 years or 50 years. Real quick on the snow removal, in terms of right-of-way, staff is working with legal team to try to put together a new snow removal policy before the snow starts flying. So we know the clock is ticking.
You got 1 week.
Uh-oh, no, don't tell me that. I won't sleep tonight.
Well, we did a zoning change in Cagle, didn't we? And made a lot size.
There's no lot size designation. The zoning, zone was changed in Cagle to match the city zone of residential. But we had discussed that if there was a need, and there felt to be a need by the city and the commission and council, to look at that further, to put down an overlay zone like we're talking about, to restrict the lots, we could look at that. That was not part of what was passed. It was just a brainstorm option for us to consider. And we can look into that that winter if council and planning commission wants us to do that.
The overlay zone really is not needed until you have water and sewer. Because there would not be another septic permit or, you know, issued for that property up there. We would not approve a partition the way it is. And so when you bring in utilities, when you bring in city services, water and sewer in particular, you open up this conversation of, oh, well, we've got city services now, we should subdivide. And so that's before that happens, which is at least a few years out, the water and sewer, we definitely, you know, want to have that conversation of if
I know somebody who lives in Cagle, and I know that his lot is larger than the 1 acre, and he was visualizing partitioning that lot, and I didn't get into it with him, but If he cannot partition it, is there anything that says he cannot put a second residence on that lot? If the lot is larger, say like your example, in a 1 acre area, but the guy has an acre and a half, which means that he's got a half acre that's of no value unless he can put, say, a rental house or something like that on it. Is that going to be in the works, or is that to be worked out?
We've sort of already had that question.
Yeah, so the code is not specific in saying thou shalt have only one single family home on a lot. The code does say that single family homes are allowed in the residential zone, and then it references accessory dwellings. And so the way, and we've talked to the legal team about this as well, is, you know, how would this be interpreted, say if it was appealed or somebody brought it up legally, that the intent of the code was that there would be only one single family home, and then the second one would be considered an accessory dwelling. So it has to be by code 30% smaller, 30% of the size of the main primary dwelling, unless there was some sort of an exception or separate allowance that was applied for. And that's the position that we've taken at this point because of that first discussion we had about a year ago. It has not been addressed in more specifics at this point.
And that would require additional water and sewer set of hookups, wouldn't it?
At least to the structure, right? I don't know whether... Sometimes the county will allow you to have your own septic tank and tap into the same drain field, but it really depends on the site and what the county building code...
If we have water and sewer out there, we wouldn't allow them to have a septic tank on it.
Well, are you talking about right now or five years from now?
Yeah.
5 years from now, if there's water and sewer in Kegel, theoretically, you could have a single family home that's connected to our system and an ADU that would be connected to our system.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just while I'm here, what about the Habitat for Humanity out there? Have they applied for more houses out there?
No, we haven't received any applications.
That is automatic. That is right now for a multiple.
Are you talking about Bedell Court off schedule?
Yep.
It's an existing plat. I can't remember if it's 9 or 10 or how many exact lots are in there, but it's a platted subdivision with the county. They had been, planning commissioners probably remember a late evening last winter, I believe, where it was talked about they had wanted to turn that into multifamily housing and basically do a replat and densify, and through various conversations, previous city manager Rick Allen, and just looking at the details of how it would function or lack thereof, they were essentially told no. So you might see more single family homes in there, but that will not become
townhouses.
That will not become multifamily townhomes or condos or anything like that.
Well, part of the big discussion about that at the time was disposal of snow. They had no place to put the snow or anything, and it would be just dead-ended, and that was the end of it. And the other thing was trying to get between the buildings, the way they had it. If you wanted to get fertilizer in your backyard, you'd have to walk through your house to get there.
Yeah. They were kind of proposing a row house idea, which I lived in a row house 2 years ago in Washington, D.C., and it worked well there, but it wouldn't have worked well in that cul-de-sac with the backyard, I'll tell you that. So, no alleyways, the tricky thing. So nothing's happening there.
In terms of
affordable housing, I'll give you a quick update. I mean, you'll know more in the coming months, but it looks like there is going to be a developer applying for a project here in Lapine, likely on some county land that's behind the Little Deschutes Lodges, to the east of Little Deschutes Lodges. And so conversations have been happening with the city and the developer and the county who owns the land, and the details are still getting sorted out, but you will we'll more than likely hear more on that in the next couple months. So I'll leave it at that for now, but just to give you a heads up. And that would probably be a 30 to 40 multifamily unit, so 2 and 3 bedroom complex. So that's exciting.
That's a tremendous need around there.
It is. It is.
We can build about 2 more of those to shoot lodges too. They have 100 people backed up on the waiting list. They aren't even accepting anymore for the backup. I mean,
it's an acute need. So
has there been anything on Gordy's? You know, have they started anything on that yet?
No, that's a good question. I've had that question a handful of times, you know, in the last few months. And what I always tell people is that I don't operate in the town gossip speculation arena. I operate on applications. And so if we have, there's no application, and even a precursor to an application would be someone coming into us and saying, hey, I want to sit down and talk about your zoning regulations and have what's called a pre-development meeting to talk about their site plan and infrastructure needs and all that. And we haven't had one of those yet either, so.
Well, I know he's spoken to the owner, spoken to the veterans on the, you know, their Wednesday morning breakfast about what the plans are.
Oh.
The ideas that they have. So I just wondered if you'd proceeded with anything.
Not yet. No, I haven't heard or seen anything from them yet.
Anything else going on?
I'll give you an update real quick, and again, I'll know more in the next few weeks. That Transit Center property on 4th Street, it's 4th Street on the south, Huntington on the west, and Highway 97 on the east. You know, the City Council approved the intergovernmental cooperative agreement between ODOT and that Transit Center at that location was included in that agreement. What the agreement doesn't spell out is how big is that Transit Center? And does the Transit Center use half of the property or 3/4 of the property or all of the property? And so city staff has been having meetings with ODOT and with COIC, Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council, who runs the regional transit network, to talk about and brainstorm what that property, what that Transit Center will look like in the short term, in the medium term, and then, you know, I'm even thinking, you know, 10 years or more from now, what will that look like? So we're not designing it in the next 3 weeks. That's not possible, but we're putting experts and people who have good experience on this together to say, this is the most realistic path forward. If you're gonna have a phased project and you need this much space for shelters, this much space for landscaping, this much space for parking, this is where the buses will pull in. So we're just trying to get our minds wrapped around what that will look like. And then ultimately, hopefully on October 12th, it'll be in front of the council to you know, make a decision, make a recommendation to ODOT, essentially saying, you know, we would like you to purchase this much of the property for this project. So we'll know more in a few weeks. We have a meeting Monday on that with ODOT and COIC. So it's in the works.
Just a quick question on the commercial structure on Huntington, $450,000.
Is that on the second
page? No, no, it's on the first page. On Sun Investors on Huntington.
Oh, that's the Lapine Community Health Center.
Oh, okay.
They're expanding. They're adding about 4,000 to 5,000 square feet onto their existing building. So we've been working with them extensively.
Because I know they had a problem with their parking and all the rest of that good stuff there.
Our engineer is their
engineer, so we're working out.
That's true. It sounds like you got an update at the Public Works Commission meeting, maybe. So we've been working with them on obviously their on-site improvements, and then also on the public improvements. And it gets a little trickier with development when you're not building a brand new clinic from scratch. So we're working with St. Charles, right? And actually that decision will be wrapped up pretty soon. And so they're building on a bare lot. And we get to say, our transportation system plan says X, Y, and Z, and therefore you need to follow X, Y, and Z, simplified version. When you're taking a 10,000 square foot building and you're adding another quarter or a third of it onto it, you can't come and say, oh, you triggered a site plan application, we're going to make you do X, Y, and Z. We might be able to make you do X and half a Y, but that's the conversation we've been having with them and sorting out. And I think that ultimately we'll get a nice finished product there in the end. Probably next spring, summer, I think is their timeline.
Yeah.
So, it's a good question.
Okay. We did not have any other members, so we'll go on to staff comment.
I don't think we have any other comments at this point. I'll say that I need to email Laura Buell, who works for ODOT in Salem, and she's the point person for this TGM, the Transportation Growth Management Program, that I gave you an update in July and said, be on the lookout, it's coming, some joint meetings with the council and some good community outreach and stuff like that. And their procurement rules for how they hire the contractor, because the nice thing about that grant is no money comes to the city or leaves the city, they just take care of all of it, which is nice for our financial system and managing the grant and all that. And so I haven't heard from her in a while, so I need to check in on that, because that should be getting underway pretty soon, I would think, or at least I wanted to. So I'll need to check in on that. And other than that, no, I think, it seems like obviously the planning season, development season is kind of coming to an end. Pre-development meetings have slowed down. We're kind of finishing up the applications that we received in the middle of the summer or the tail end of the summer, and that doesn't surprise me to a degree, but I'd expect if things, if the economy stays strong, I'm optimistic that, we're in for more positive, smart growth next spring.
Ready for next year.
Yeah, exactly. We got a little while to catch our breath. That's it from us, I think.
Okay. Planning Commission comments, Norm?
I'm good tonight.
Okay. About you, Russ?
I've been commenting enough.
Don?
I second that motion.
Okay. I just want to welcome you aboard. Glad to have you. And if that's it, I really don't have anything to say. So I'll.
Did you ask Tammy if she had anything to say?
Well, he nodded at her.
I would chime in if I did. We're still processing a lot of applications, and you get notices of them. So if you have questions on them, certainly let me know anytime. Give me a call, email. But yeah, like Cora said, we are still busy, and we're going to be busy for the next month. We expect a few more site plans to come in, some big ones. Site plan for St. Charles is probably coming in a couple weeks, so that's a big one, although we've seen it, and we know what it looks like, so there won't be any surprises. But I would say in another 6 to 8 weeks, we'll slow down a little bit into some of those back burner items that we can start digging into during the snowy season.
Thank you. Okay, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I so motion.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Opposed.
Thanks, everybody.
No opposed.
Sorry.